Welcome to our Local Voices special presentation called A Glance Back on 94.7 KPIP LP Fayette. A Glance Back is brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and local historian. Local Voices, A Glance Back, a two-hour program, airs every Monday and Friday starting at noon and then again at 4 p.m. The show focuses on the music, radio features, and history of World War II and beyond as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. Thank you for tuning in to this special edition of Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP.
That my heart and mind embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut tree, the wishing well. Light and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is through, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
Thanks to the Boonslick Historical Society for bringing us this historical content on Local Voices with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Look for the silver lining whenever skies are gray. No matter what befalls you now, there will come a brighter day. The world will sing again, the bells will ring again, and lonely hearts are meeting, life begins anew. The sun will rise again, there'll be blue skies again, with not a cloud to hide the loveliness in view. Although your dreams have gone, just smile and carry on. There must be a darkest hour before the dawn. The world will sing again, a song of spring again, for there'll be happiness around the bend for you. And then the dreams you've dreamed will all come
him and all you say when you have kissed him.
are listening to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP. Now, our local historian, Jim Steele, will take us back to the age of World War II.
Welcome to KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back. I'm Jim Steele reporting. By the way, this is part two of our report from last week concerning what was going on in and around Howard County at the time of Pearl Harbor, which, as you probably know, we're now getting ready to observe the 80th anniversary of that monumental attack by the Japanese Empire, which plunged this nation into World War II. Now, last week, as you may recall, we talked about the events locally leading up to the attack. And so now we'll take a look at what happened here in Howard County after the attack took place. Well, 80 years ago was a period in our nation's history described by historian Doris Kearns Goodwin as no ordinary time. So by using the files of the Democrat leader and Fayette Advertiser, we will attempt to provide some sense and flavor of what was going on in this community and elsewhere as our nation hovered on what would be the seminal event of the 20th century. Well, as 1941 dawned, FDR was beginning an unprecedented third term, and in homes across the country, radio was king. Most Americans were starting to believe they should help Britain in its fight for survival with Germany. The first peacetime draft here had occurred in September 1940, and this, of course, had ominous overtones for the future here and elsewhere. England was being bombed incessantly, and many believed it would be only a matter of time before America would be involved. As we noted last week, tensions had been escalating throughout the 1930s, and they had intensified with the Munich Crisis of 1938, followed by the formal outbreak of war in Europe in September 1939 as Germany invaded Poland. Beginning in 1940, with the Fayette Advertiser and Democrat leader, they devoted a full column on the left-hand front page of each issue, reporting news of the world, especially war developments. Like most of the rest of the country, Howard County residents still clung to isolationism. But as news continued to unfold in 1941, it was clear that most folks here and elsewhere had to face the reality that sooner or later we need to get into the fray. Daily newspapers from St. Louis, Kansas City, and Columbia helped keep local readers abreast of the latest developments, as did radio reports from Missouri's network stations. Finally, the day comes that stuns the nation as Japanese naval and air forces attack Pearl Harbor on Sunday, December the 7th, 1941. A little sidebar here in Fayette around 1:30 that afternoon in a home on Spring Street in Fayette, Central College student John Hurt, who later would be the editor and publisher of the Fayette newspapers, was living as a student boarder in the home of Henry and Edith Rethwich. He was studying in his room while listening to the New York Philharmonic on the radio when the flash comes. Immediately, he descended the steps to the basement where Henry Rethwich and a local dentist by the name of White are engaged in a fast game of ping pong. Hurt brings them the news, but reportedly the game continues without so much as a pause. The following day, declarations of war come against Japan, Germany, and Italy. All military leaves and furloughs of men in the 35th Division, of which Fayette's Company M is a part, are canceled. A full 8-column headline, which was a rarity for Fayette newspapers in those days, bring details of the attack. News accounts also report that many people from this area are in harm's way in the Pacific War Zone, and local Red Cross quotas are raised, and officials here call on residents to buy war bonds and stamps. Soon, small V for Victory symbols appear at the end of every news story in the Fayette papers. Indeed, the news is grim. Howard County, along with the rest of the nation, will be at war for the next 3.5 years. The Monday following the attack, most of the nation listens to a noon Central Time broadcast by President Roosevelt, with his deep, resonant voice saying, "Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a day which will live in infamy." Let's take a listen.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after, Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
Incidentally, President Roosevelt usually had been transported in a standard limousine to the Capitol for one of his addresses. However, on his way this day to deliver the formal declaration of war, he rode in a bulletproof limousine that had been confiscated from convicted gangster Al Capone some years earlier. Well, no one could foresee what the future would bring during these early days of 1941. And the early months of 1942 were bleak indeed for this country, as we were losing everywhere. The Japanese seemed unstoppable as they advanced across the Western Pacific and throughout Southeast Asia, as islands and countries fell under their onslaught. In the news were names of faraway places that few people in those days had ever heard of, much less could locate on a map. Places like Wake, Midway, Guam, and so forth flashed and then just as quickly faded, only to be replaced by some other obscure places on the other side of the world. The war brought many startling discoveries, one being that there was huge areas of the world that had not ever been mapped. U.S. and British cartographers divided up the unmapped areas to avoid duplication. No previous conflict had taken American military personnel to so many different places in the world all at the same time, and maps were one of the many things needed by the military. Back home, blackouts were imposed in all homes, right here in Fayette too, especially though on the east and west coast, with the result being that after sundown, if the interior room in your home had a light burning, you had to keep the window blinds drawn shut so no light penetrated into the night. This was for protection against enemy air raids, of course. We don't think, however, that Fayette was ever considered much of a target. Well, very few automobiles for the consumer market were manufactured after Pearl Harbor in 1941, as the assembly lines had converted to producing war material of all kinds. Keep in mind, however, that a goodly number of 1942 models already had been produced, and these, by the way, are now fairly collectible. But back to the war, as the months and years passed, the fighting intensified as the names of still more strange places crept into the headlines. Tarawa, Saipan, Tinian, Leyte, Iwo Jima. And then after 1,364 days, more than 3.5 years of fighting, it was over, and the world would never again be the same. From there on, many conversations would speak simply before the war or after the war. Even for those who did not fight in it, war affects the soul and marrow of a nation, winner and loser, and marks a turning point in history as well as in all the lives affected. The United States population in December 1941 was nearly 131 million, and more than 12 million of those ultimately went off to war. It was a period when most things were in short supply, or at least many things, except for vegetables. Nearly everything was rationed. Meat, butter, sugar, gasoline, tires, even shoes. You were only allowed 2 pair a year because leather was needed for the war effort. The government imposed price controls on many food items. For example, a loaf of bread was a dime. Cokes and candy bars, if you could find them, cost just a nickel apiece. There was virtually no unemployment, and people had a lot of money, but there was little to buy. And if you didn't have the necessary ration stamps, you couldn't make a purchase anyway. There was, of course, a black market, but it was illegal and secretive, and most people frowned upon it because it was considered unpatriotic. It may have been one of the few times in history when the entire nation was dedicated to one single all-consuming goal: win the war. There's never been anything like it since. A number of things important to citizens at the time were unavailable, and many companies had billboards with a picture of their product displaying, for example, Spearmint has gone to war, or see you after the war. Nash Kelvinator, Firestone, Lockheed, and International Trucks, just to name a few, all had similar billboards posted around the nation. Gasoline was in such short supply that local dairies made morning deliveries of bottled milk by horse-drawn wagons, and those same wagons would deliver deliver huge blocks of ice for the icebox, since many folks had yet to purchase electric refrigerators. Here in Howard County, only a relatively few farms outside the city had yet to be reached by the REA, which of course had to suspend running of electric lines until after the war. Also, there were relatively few automobiles on the road, and all the assembly lines had been converted to build military equipment. America's industrial base was being transformed into a gigantic war machine. The Henry Chrysler shipyards were soon turning out one ship every 80 hours, and at Ford's Willow Run plant in Ypsilanti, Michigan, work was started on the plant to produce airplanes, and construction was still in progress when the first completed aircraft rolled out. Many homes here in Fayette and elsewhere had a blue star on a small red cloth banner hanging in the window, proclaiming they had a family member in the service. And when death came to some, they were replaced sadly by gold stars. It was a time of V-mail and victory gardens. Almost everyone had cultivated part of their yard to produce vegetables for their own consumption. The government sponsored all sorts of collection of surplus or used goods, which were called drives. There were paper drives, where Boy Scouts in particular would collect old newspapers, presumably to help the war effort. In reviewing the Fayette newspapers during those years, there are numerous accounts of scout paper drives, usually in both the spring and the fall. There were also drives to collect scrap metal, aluminum, rubber, and so on. Some kids never really figured out whether all the stuff that was being collected ever found its way to the war effort, or whether it was simply a contrived activity devised to keep the kids busy and out of trouble, since many of their mothers had replaced men working in war plants, and of course they were not home during the day, except in the evening. However, this was probably less true in Fayette than in some urban areas. Nonetheless, even here, there were accounts in the paper of local young women engaged elsewhere in war work. President Roosevelt called the country the great arsenal of democracy, and by the end of the war, the United States had produced 29,000 aircraft, 71,000 naval vessels, and 2.4 million trucks. Someone in the government became concerned that because of the rationing of food, there might be children who would not get sufficient protein in their diet. So every day in some schools, we don't know whether that happened here or not, kids would take large spoons from their desks and line up while the teacher made them swallow unpleasant-tasting cod liver oil, and it was. Here in Fayette, the Katy Line from Franklin to Moberly still was in fairly good condition, and occasionally troop trains would come rumbling through, especially when flooding or some other problem had closed the main line. At the New Franklin switchyards, an observer might watch great puffing steam engines pulling a trail of flat cars, loaded with tanks and military vehicles of all types, going wherever. It was also a time when you could get 6 bottles of Coca-Cola in a wooden carrying case for a quarter, and the Saturday double feature at the Fayette Theater, later known as the Grand, cost a dime. War bonds were sold to finance the war for $18.25, later redeemable at $25. By 1944, radio listeners were receiving relatively good news about the war effort. Folks would see newsreels at the local theater or listen to radio broadcasts in the evening. Americans, for example, listened to Edward R. Murrow and the Lucky Strike Hit Parade. And, of course, it was the era of the big bands. In those days, the radio in the living room was a major piece of furniture and an ear on unfolding world events. We had, of course, heard of television, but only about a half dozen TV stations in major cities were on the air, and it wouldn't have much of an impact until much later in the post-war years. Getting back to events unfolding in this region after Pearl Harbor, the first issue of the Democrat Leader reports that a mass meeting of all ex-servicemen, mostly folks from World War I, would take place at the American Legion Hall to explain the role of veterans in this new crisis. Other articles in the paper noted that men over the age of 28 now will be drafted, and that a tire rationing board has been set up for Howard County. It might be observed in passing that the appearance of the newspapers, particularly the front page, did not change much during those war years. Generally, there were no headlines going across more than one or two columns. The major news of the day mostly was placed in the upper left and upper right columns. Well, as the war progressed, there was a standing headline titled, "News of Our Men in Service." The second issue of January 1942, volunteers are asked to register for civil defense work here, and plans are announced for 14 air raid warning stations in Howard County. In mid-January, several Fayette city leaders travel to Jefferson City to learn plans to push sales of defense stamps and bonds. Meanwhile, librarians at the Fayette City Library and at the Central College Library are among a group of local residents named to a committee to be part of a national campaign to provide books for men in the armed forces. Later in January, FDR signs the wartime Daylight Savings Time Bill, with clocks to be advanced 1 hour beginning in February, which, according to the Office of Production Management, will save the country 500,000 kilowatt hours a year. Fayette business leaders later adopt uniform business hours to conform to the new law. Until the end of the war, that time will be known as, for example, Eastern Wartime or Central Wartime, and so forth. Incidentally, it was in effect all year round. Also in the news, the Deatherage and Moon Garage in Fayette collects old license plates as part of a statewide drive for scrap metal. Late in January, it's noted by the Howard County Health Nurse that this county has a higher death rate in the 5 leading causes of death than the state as a whole, especially in the number of those dying from tuberculosis. In mid-February, it's announced that 850 Howard County men are expected to register for selective service, and it's reported that 31 men from this county have enlisted in the Navy since September 1939. Also in February, it's noted at a meeting of the local REA that 75% of the rural homes here, which already were wired for electricity, have electric refrigeration for meat, milk, and other foods. But keep in mind that many more homes in the county did not get wired up until after the war in the rural areas. Well, in light of the war effort, farmers are called to set production goals for 1942. And in town, Fayette insurance man Alva Kirby is named to head the local civilian defense effort. Late in February, it's learned that the local CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps camp, an operation here since 1939, will be closed in 2 months. It was located, by the way, on East Elm at the site where the National Garment Factory later was situated. Also, it's reported that Howard County will be allotted 11 new cars during the coming months. Word coming in March states that local groceries must sign up to take part in sugar rationing, which will begin soon. Meanwhile, an auxiliary fire department is formed here to aid in defense efforts, and word from the West Coast notes that Fayette's General Lewis M. Means, formerly the state's adjutant general, has been named commanding general of the U.S. Northern Defense Area based in Washington State. As spring nears, it's reported that the pastor of the Christian Church in Fayette led the local drive for the USO, and that Fayette Boy Scouts seek a location to plant a victory garden. A brief article in early April states that servicemen may send free mail anywhere in the country so long as their rank and branch of service is written in the upper left-hand corner. Well, here in Fayette, plans also are announced for an I Pledge America campaign, this for war bonds and stamps, with a mass meeting scheduled at the courthouse. And as more men are needed for military service, it's learned that Howard County men between now 45 and 64 will be called up to register for the draft. Also here, early in May of 1942, sadly, Dr. Robert Ruff, Central College's president since 1930, dies at his home in Fayette after a 2.5-year bout with cancer. He had stepped down the previous November due to ill health, and Dean Puckett had been filling in as acting president. Soon afterward, it's announced that one Harry S. DeVore, a Methodist district superintendent from Dallas, will be Central College's new president. Also in May, Fayette merchants get ready for price lids and credit controls, and the local Federated Women's Club pledges to serve silently. Plans for carrying out a USO fund drive are completed. And a huge drive for scrap metal is announced for late May in Howard County. All truckers are asked to assist. Later in the month, a large contingent of Fayette businessmen gather at a Chamber of Commerce meeting to learn of new government regulation. During this period, nearly every issue of the newspaper includes the names of groups departing for service from Howard County. And celebrations in the courthouse are held to provide gifts and a warm send-off for the men in some of the larger groups. Also, an article notes that the recent scrap drive here has netted nearly 500 tons of scrap, enough to build 7 tanks. In June, Howard Countyans are told there'll be no teacher shortage in the fall, thanks mainly to salary increases for women teachers. And the head of the local Civilian Defense Committee urges all homeowners and businesses to display the flag on Flag Day. Later in June, Central's President DeVore states that extracurricular activities, especially athletics, might need to be abandoned or curtailed in the fall due to wartime factors. Also, another salvage drive in Fayette. That's more than 18,000 pounds of scrap rubber for the war. Also, Howard County bond sales exceed the quota by more than $12,000. Well, as fall nears, Central College prepares to begin its first full school year under wartime conditions. And it is reported that the college here has been assigned a quota of 103 men for enlistment in the Army Enlisted Reserve Corps. However, students generally will be permitted to receive degrees before actual enlistment. In spite of war conditions, Central's 1942-43 fall enrollment is described as strong, but with fewer upperclassmen returning due to the war. There is a waiting list to get into McMurray Hall, and only 13 returning lettermen turn out for football practice. There are 6 games on the schedule. Meanwhile, the Central Freshman Band plays on the courthouse lawn. It's announced that a group of 50 students from Fort Leonard Wood will be on hand September the 25th for a huge war bond rally and a patriotic parade around the Fayette Square. About the same time, a house-to-house scrap collection drive is underway to include every home and farm in Howard County. And early in October, a group of 18 men depart from here for induction at Jefferson Barracks in St. Louis. Getting back to the war news, in the fall of 1942, it's noted that bus schedules for the Marshall, Boone, Bill, Moberly stage lines have been revised to accommodate the 35-mile-an-hour wartime speed limit. On a related matter, motorists in the county are advised to sign up for gas rationing, which will begin in November 22nd. It's already in effect in the eastern part of the United States. In other news of transportation, the MKT train wrecks near Roachport, and that, of course, gathers national news headlines. Not long afterward, an MKT passenger train headed for Parsons, Kansas, derails in Boonville behind Kemper Military School. The engineer is scalded to death from hot water. However, the fireman is injured but does recover. Also in October, the Commercial Trust Company notes new hours of operation, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., to accommodate farmers with gas rationing who will not be able to get to town as often as before. And it's reported that coffee rationing will kick in late in November, meaning that the average coffee drinker will not get much more than a cup a day. In Howard County, Civilian Defense Chairman Alva Kirby states that all motorists must register between November 12th and 14th for gas rationing. Most of these folks get A stickers. Available on application are B books for those who can prove they need additional gas for their occupation. C books are rare and are only for those in essential work for the home front, such as doctors and other health workers, plus ministers, government officials, and others especially needed for the war effort. Farmers also get special consideration. Regulations on tires are part of this effort, and of course the tires in those days did not last as long as they do today. Everyone was required to report any tires already on hand. An A ration provided about 4 gallons a week, and a typical Chevy or Ford of that period would rarely get more than 15 miles to the gallon, which means that a week's worth of gas might get you from Fayette to Columbia and back. Emergency coupons for sickness or other emergencies could be obtained. Alva Kirby warns that any motorist caught exceeding the 35-mile-an-hour wartime speed limit would have to have his gas ration taken away. Later, it's learned that the beginning of gas rationing has been delayed to December 1942, and the day before rationing begins, motorists rush to fill their tanks in addition to filling all other containers imaginable, including whiskey jugs. In other news, registration regulations now permit calling up men between the ages of 18 and 21. Earlier, it was 21 and over. Also in the news, it's noted that local bond sales have been better than reported. A constant issue of each paper carries at least 2 photographs of men in the service and a brief description of where they are stationed. Also, they tell where in Howard County they're from and often something about their family. Also in December, it's reported that the Commercial Trust Company has agreed to be part of a nationwide $9 billion drive to sell government securities. The bank's quota is $100,000. As Christmas 1942 nears, Howard County prepares to join the Midwest for this region's first blackout of the war, with wardens, firemen, and other volunteers ready to go to their posts on the alert signal. Later, it's reported that the test here, at least, is 100% successful with no known incidents. On a less happy note, the OPA warns that fuel oil could be in short supply for the winter. At Central College, it's announced that fully a third of the male students are now in the Army, Navy, or Marine Corps reserves. Later in December, fully 17 Howard County women received Red Cross Home Nursing Awards as part of the war effort. As New Year's Day in 1943 dawns, it's said that holiday festivities in Fayette have included a large number of engagements and money and weddings, many due, no doubt, promoted by hurried wartime circumstances. Later that month, plans are completed for Howard County Farm Mobilization Day. and the local War Price and Ration Board warns residents here to confirm to OPA Meat Restriction Order Number 1. Later in January, it's revealed that L.W. Jacobs Jr. again will head the local Red Cross War Fund drive with a quota of $4,400. Meanwhile, it's announced that Howard County banks have exceeded their quota for purchase of government securities for the Treasury Department's $9 billion Victory Fund drive with $272,000 subscribed in Fayette, about half of which had been raised by commercial trusts. Also during this time, Central College has its first winter graduation with 22 seniors receiving degrees. So now we conclude this backward glance at a special and unique time in Howard County and throughout the nation. Those who are old enough to have taken part in World War II and have been lucky enough to have survived must have gone through some of the greatest adventures in which a person could have participated. Ultimately, they were listed among those men and women dubbed by Tom Brokaw as the greatest generation. Howard Countyans celebrated VJ Day in August 1945 as Mayor Henry Rethowitz issued a victory proclamation and church bells and the courthouse bell rang in celebration, as well as having special church services to commemorate the event. Looking back at those bygone days, folks here and elsewhere would say, after the war, nothing will be the same. That was a long time ago, and now, of course, we know what they meant. After the war, the United States emerged as the undisputed victor and the wealthiest nation on earth. We were unscathed at home, totally intact, with an industrial base equal to that of all nations around the world. American cities were untouched by the devastation of the greatest war the world had ever known. To have grown up in those incredibly rich halcyon war years and the post-war years to follow was to be an extremely fortunate member of the luckiest generation in recorded history. It was a time which indeed will never be repeated again. For KPIP Local Voices, A Glance Back, this is Jim Steele reporting.
That was our glance back in time with Jim Steele, president of the Boone Slick Historical Society. This series with Jim Steele will continue every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. during Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP.
We've got another bond to buy. We've got another bond to buy. The bonds we bought before bought the bond that won the war. Now we've got another bond to buy. Well, you may think the war is won, but we can't leave the job half done. The boys have seen it through, now the rest is up to you. Yes, we've got another bond to buy. Bonds away, put your dough where it earns. Bonds away, and someday you'll get so many happy returns. You know with every bond you buy, you've done your part for some brave guy. We've got to play it square with the boys we've got out there, so we've got another bond to buy.
We've got another bond to buy.
Go out and buy it.
We've got another bond to buy.
Go out and buy it. The bonds we bought before bought the bond that won the war. Now we've got another bond to buy. Dig in your pockets.
Oh, you may think the war is won.
Ask any soldier.
But we can't leave the job half done.
The Navy will tell you. The boys have seen it through. Now the rest is up to you. Yes, we've got another bond to buy. Bonds away, put your dough where it is. Bonds away, and someday you'll have so many happy returns. You'll know with every bond you buy, you've done your part for some brave guy. There's Joe and Jim and Jack, and we gotta bring them back. Buy a bond today.
We got another bond.
For a treat. To freshen taste and keep breath sweet, get double smoothness. Flavor, too. Get the gum that's double good to chew.
Double your pleasure, double your fun with double the double the double mint gum.
And Now, before the overture to the second act of the Gibson family, let's step backstage and look in on Sally Gibson and Hilda, her maid, who is helping Sally change for the next scene.
Quick, Hilda, hold this dress. I've never been so excited in all my life.
It's really wonderful, isn't it, Miss Sally?
Too wonderful. That scene in the garden.
It made me think of Henry, Miss Sally. Miss Sally, if I had your complexion, do you suppose Henry would...
What, Hilda?
Help me, what's wrong with my face, Miss Sally? Those red blotches just won't go away.
Soap, probably. What kind are you using? Some beauty soap, I suppose.
Yes, Miss Sally. That one that promises radiant beauty, glamorous youth, irresistible loveliness. Oh, Miss Sally, I had hoped Henry would...
Yes, so did I once. And then I learned the truth. You can't feed the pores of your skin with beauty oils or mysterious ingredients.
No.
And many highly perfumed, prettily colored soaps contain fatty acids and free alkali that really irritate and harm your skin.
But, Miss Sally...
My doctor recommended Ivory. He says all any soap can do is cleanse, and that to protect the fine texture and pores, a soap should cleanse gently. And that to do that, a soap must be pure. He said Ivory would help to keep my skin smooth and fine.
And Miss Sally, do you think Henry would...
Oh, quick, my gloves, Hilda. Is the bell for the second act?
No, Hilda will never get a Grecian nose by using a beauty soap. But we do hope she gets Henry. And now for the overture to our second act. All right, Don.
Thanks to the Boonslick Historical Society for bringing us this historical content on Local Voices with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Camp that night, wondered what tomorrow'd bring. A banjo chord came through the blue, and I heard somebody sing. Little bit lonesome, little bit blue, cleaning my rifle and dreaming of you. Beautiful memories come into view while cleaning my rifle and dreaming of you. That goodbye kiss you left on my lips is still just like new, and the dream you left in my heart will someday come true. But in the meantime, think of me, do, cleaning my rifle and dreaming of you.
Crosby with a tune they're singing all over the United Nations from Brooklyn to Bombay.
There's a troop ship just leaving Bombay, bound for the blimey shore, heavily laden with time-expired men, bound for the land they adore. There's many a bloke who has just missed the boat, there's many a lad signing on, but there'll be no promotion this side of the ocean, so cheer up, my lads, bless them all. bless them all, bless them all, the long and the short and the tall. Bless all the sergeants, the top kickers too. Bless all the corporals, and above all, bless you, for we're saying goodbye to them all. As up the gangway we crawl, no ice cream and cookies for stout-hearted rookies. So cheer up, me lads, bless them all.
They say that in camp you can have a swell time. We've heard it all before.
5 in the morning and you're kicked out of bed to scrub up the barracks room floor.
A private has really no privacy now. We're all behind the 8 ball. No ice cream and cookies for flat-footed rookies. So cheer up, my lads, bless them all.
Bless them all.
Bless them all.
Bless them all. Just to remind them they're on the right track. Stand right behind them and back that attack. That's the least you can do after all. For those who must carry the ball. So keep buying war bonds, buy more and more war bonds. That's how to say bless them all.
Taking a glance back at history with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Some folks put much reliance on politics and science. There's only one hero for me. It's praise we should be roaring, the man who thought of pouring the first boiling water onto tea. I like a nice cup of tea in the morning, for to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea. I like a nice cup of tea with me dinner, and a nice cup of tea with me tea. And when it's time for bed, there's a lot to be said for a nice cup of tea. You can talk about your science and your airships in the sky. I can do without the wireless and you'll never see me fly. The public benefactor of the universe for me is the genius of thought of pouring water onto tea. I like a nice cup of tea in the morning for to start the day, you see. And when I've set the breakfast in, well, my idea of sin is a fourth or a fifth cup of tea. I like a nice cup of tea with me dinner, and a nice cup of tea with me tea. And when it's time for bed, there's a lot to be said for a nice cup of tea. They say it's not nutritious, but still it is delicious, and that's all that matters to me. It turns your meat to leather, but let's all die together. The one drink in paradise is tea. I like a nice cup of tea in the morning, for to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea. I like a nice cup of tea with me dinner, and a nice cup of tea with me tea. And when it's time for bed, as I think I may have said, I'd like a nice cup of tea. You can talk about your liberties, they talk of women's rights. I don't want to make no speeches, cause the one that does is science. And anyone can have me vote and chuck it in the sea. But golly, there'd be trouble if they try to touch me tea. I like a nice cup of tea with me dinner, and a nice cup of tea with me tea. And when it's getting late, anything can wait for a nice cup of tea.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you. And the way you look tonight, yes, you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love you and the way you look tonight. With each word, your tenderness grows, tearing my fear apart. And that laugh wrinkles your nose, touches my foolish heart. Lovely, never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Touches my foolish heart. Lovely, don't you ever change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Just the way.